Good morning. It's 9 minutes after 8 o'clock. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Joy Cardine this week. Joy will be back on Monday. Well, the Midwest Renewable Energy Association is holding their annual energy fair for the 19th time, in fact. It'll be at Custer, Wisconsin. It comes up next week. And if you don't know where Custer is, it's 7 miles east of Stevens Point. Part of that energy fair will be focused on sustainable communities, and there are a lot of workshops and so forth pointed in that direction. One specifically is Sunday, June 22nd. There's an eco-municipality and sustainability seminar, and that is kind of where this program came from, because the person giving that seminar is my guest this hour, or my first guest this hour. Torbjorn Lahti is the project director for Sustainable Robertsfors, a 5-year sustainable community demonstration project. He was the project planner for Sweden's first eco-municipality, Overtonio, and launched the eco-municipality movement in Sweden. He is the co-author of the book, The Natural Step for Communities, How Cities and Towns Can Change to Sustainable Practices. And that's what we want to talk about today, not the book, but the idea that cities and towns can have an impact on our planet, that we can start having a reducing our carbon footprint, for example, by starting in our own neighborhood, in our own community. And so that's what we want to talk about this hour. And having given you the theme or the thesis of the hour, I'm now going to give you the phone number so you can call in and ask questions. Or if you have ideas or you want to talk about what's going on in your community that works in that way, or just have a conversation with our guests, here's how you do that. 800-642-1234. That's a toll-free number. 800-642-1234, toll-free. In Madison, please call us at 263-1890, 263-1890. You can also send us an email. Here's the address, talk@wpr.org. So let me introduce again my guest is Torbjorn Lahti. He joins me by telephone. Good morning, and thank you for being part of the program today.
Oh, good morning, John.
First of all, I want to start out by hearing about what happened over in Sweden, where you kind of got this thing started in the community of Overtonio. Tell me what that community was like before the sustainability practices started being put in place, and what it's like now.
Well, it's a 25-year story, so I don't know if you had the time to give you the whole story.
Well, we don't have 25 years, so give me the Reader's Digest version instead.
But you can imagine a community with high unemployment, with some kind of deep depression, where the word apathy probably is the best word to describe the situation. And in that situation, we started up a project where I become the process leader, you can call me. And we tried to somewhere go into a little bit deeper sense of who are we and what can we do to change the situation. And what you must remember that these people up there, they were very close to nature. So some kind of natural lifestyle was relatively easy to start from. And here was where the first eco-municipality appeared as some kind of solution for what was impossible to solve within the what I nowadays would call the old paradigm. So from this, we mobilized people to actually take the future in their own hands, begin to discuss what kind of future do we want to have, and so on. And this process went on, and in the end, after 6-7 years of work, we could actually see that with a municipality with only 6,000 inhabitants, there was lots of, maybe a couple of hundred new firms, new jobs as a result of this process. So eco for me is both ecology and economy. By having some kind of ecological approach, you start to develop your own community, but as with some kind of win-win relationship to nature. That's important to say.
And this is apparently spread across Sweden, and there's In fact, Sweden and Norway and Finland, the Scandinavian countries, are, correct me if I'm wrong, but they're now basically energy independent.
Well, it's you could say the municipality of Övertorneå is definitely more or less independent of fossil energy today. If they had no fossil fuels or fossil energy at all, they would survive compared to most of the other, or all other communities. So, but if you go to the countries, we are not that far yet. But it's a movement going on in the Nordic countries. It's a movement actually going on in the whole planet today. We had an international eco-municipality conference the other week where 100 persons from 16 countries, from 6 continents, come together and actually starting up the first global network of eco-municipalities.
In a situation where you're trying to get something like this, the idea of working toward an eco-municipality started, where does the leadership come from? Does it come from the public officials, the mayors, the political leaders of a community, or does it come from the residents themselves, or is it both?
It can come from anyone. So it's actually the person who starts up this. We call them fire souls. Persons that are burning over some kind of commitment for working with sustainable development. And the fire soul can be a politician. It can be anyone, a grassroots member or whatever. But what's important is that during the process, you need to have the municipality to endorse the program and actually take those four principles for sustainability. That's one of the key components in the concept.
What are those four principles, please?
It's a scientific-based framework where we try to define what we mean by sustainable development. And simply speaking, the first one is about you can't take from the matter from the earth crust into the society. We must be very careful how you are using matters from the earth crust. The second one is about what you do with matters that come out to nature, where you actually should ask yourself, do nature like what you let go out to the nature again? So you can't, for instance, use chemicals that nature can't process. The third one is about land use, where you can't take in resources from nature more than actually nature produce. That means that you can't, for instance, the codfish outside where I'm just now, New England, you know that it disappeared since people were fishing too much and so on. Then the first is about nature and the relationship towards nature. The fourth is about human being. It's simply saying that you must eliminate all hindrances for people to actually meet their fundamental needs in the end. So, and this is a very, very radical vision, you could say, but at the same time it's somewhere defining the criteria that we must actually in the end come to if we want to survive. And this also says that it's a step-by-step change. We can't be sustainable tomorrow, but we must make up some kind of program where we step-by-step. It might take 50 years before we are there, but we start now to come where we must be within that same frame.
Well, let's start. Let's talk about that journey, that step-by-step process. What would the first step be? How do we get on that road? What can I do today in my community, for example, to start us in this direction?
Well, many have done it in Wisconsin. They have started to learn more about what this is about. And study circles is one way of doing it. I like this study circle form because it allows adults to actually go together and discuss together. You can take any kind of material as a study circle material and go through it and discuss together. So learning is very important. But then it's a question of planning and doing, too. So try to find your friends, the fire source around you. Build up network. Learn, begin to plan, but start doing immediately because these three key components is going on all the time. release the doers, I would say immediately. Try to find those good examples that already exist and try to develop new good examples. But try also to give the doers as much of education as possible. You can give them checklists, so they learn during the journey, so learning by doing. So learning, doing, planning is the three components in a successful process.
Well, this is actually happening in communities in Wisconsin. In fact, there are 16 communities in Wisconsin that have labeled themselves as eco-municipalities, and we're going to have somebody who's involved in city government in one of those eco-municipalities join us on the other side of this break, and we'll find out exactly how this is working in Wisconsin. And here's your chance to call in and ask a question. You're sitting there right now, you're listening to the radio, and you're thinking, you know what, I want to get involved in this. I'd like my community to be an eco-municipality. Okay, why don't you call in and you can ask our guest experts how that can work, and you can hear an example of how it has worked in some communities in Wisconsin, and this is your chance to find out how you can start to reduce your carbon footprint in your community where you live. It all has to start somewhere, I guess, and so if not us, who? Or something like that. Anyway, here's how you do that. The phone number is 800-642-1234, toll-free, 800-642-1234. In Madison, it's a local call, so we'd prefer that you use our local number, 263-1890, 263-1890. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We'll be right back and take your calls, and we'll talk with someone who's actually making this sustainability thing happen here in Wisconsin right after these messages. It's 8:22. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Here's what's coming up a little bit later on today on the Ideas Network. A recent flight over the Amazon rainforest snapped pictures of people never seen before. Their tribe is unknown to the world, and now debate rages over whether they should remain isolated. After one on Talk of the Nation, the lost tribe of Brazil and the prospect of meeting the modern world. After 1 o'clock this afternoon on Talk of the Nation here on the Ideas Network. This hour, sustainability is our topic, and we've been speaking with Torbjørn Lotte, who's a project director for Sustainable Robertsfors, a 5-year sustainable community demonstration project in Sweden, and he's also the co-author of The Natural Step for Communities, How Cities and Towns Can Change to Sustainable Practices. His co-author, Sarah James. Torbjørn Lotte will be speaking at the Midwest Energy Fair in Custer, Wisconsin. That's near Stevens Point. A week from Sunday, June 22nd, he'll be giving a talk there. So if you're interested in seeing him, that's where you need to go. I want to welcome in another guest to join us and talk about something that's actually happening in Wisconsin. I mentioned that Wisconsin has 16 eco-municipalities. Well, one of them is Ashland, Wisconsin, and we have Mary Raywald with us by phone, who's serving her 10th year on the Ashland City Council, where she led the effort to have the city become one of the first eco-municipalities in the United States 3 years ago. She's co-founder of the Alliance for Sustainability and a fellow at the Wisconsin Rural Leadership Program, and she also teaches at Northland College. And Mary, good morning, and thanks for joining us. Appreciate you being here today.
Good morning, John. Thanks for inviting me.
Well, I should also mention that Mary was instrumental in helping us to secure funding a number of years ago for a pair of translator stations we have in Ashland. So thank you for that.
Yes.
That's actually, I think, where I first met you.
Yes, it is.
Talk a little bit about the process that you went through to get Ashland to the point of declaring itself an eco-municipality, and what are the things that the city of Ashland is doing to make itself more sustainable?
It's been about 4 years that we've been working on this, and I have to say that the original inspiration was from Torbjørn. Hello, Torbjørn.
Hello, buddy.
Came to visit the Midwest back in 2004. I heard him speak and have been to Sweden twice and learned many ideas from them. But we recognized, we liked the model in Sweden where local governments became the organizations that put forth a vision for how a community could be. And I think one thing that Torbjorn just mentioned reflects the situation in our rural community, and that is it was during a time of recession and real economic challenge in northern Sweden when this began. And, you know, in Ashland, I mean, frankly, we live in an area of high poverty, an area that needs a lot of jobs. We only our median income up here in Ashland is $12,000 below the state's average. But in any case, the first eco-municipality was brought forward as a resolution by Irene Blakely on the Washburn City Council, and then I brought it forward on the Ashland City Council. And we had a good discussion about it. It was adopted unanimously in Ashland. And we follow the four natural step principles. And the way we've implemented that recently is to set up a green team network of early adopters of sustainability, which I had coordinated for the last year. And the city of Ashland is one of 18 organizations and businesses that's in this network, which means inside the city of Ashland, for example, we have a team of about 4 to 5 people who meet regularly and talk about sustainable practices because it generally isn't on the agenda. And we have other organizations in our community that are doing the same thing, and they involve retail sector. We have the Schwamigan Food Co-op and Walmart and the Deepwater Grill. We have two industries, Ashland Industries and Washburn Ironworks. And we also have the school districts, the higher educational organizations, the hospital, our transportation company, and other government groups. And there's a synergy that comes out of those discussions that otherwise wouldn't happen.
So they've all bought into this, but what specifically is happening? What kinds of activities are taking place? What sort of plans are you making?
Well, the network is only a year old, and we spent the first year trying to define how we could make change inside of our organizations. So we trained ourselves in the natural step framework, which Torbjorn has outlined. We also took some practical energy management workshops from Focus on Energy, which has been a great ally. And, you know, there is people can go online and watch our summary reports of all of our proposals from the organizations. But I could give you a couple of examples. Let's see here. I'm looking at the list. The Northern Great Lakes Visitors Center has been a very active group in our network, and they're planning on, they're doing research to put up a 150-foot wind turbine. They're going for LEED certification as an existing building to upgrade. They're exploring solar and geothermal assessments, doing annual tree planting with school children. And then if you look at, for example, the Ashland Industries, which is one of our two industries in the network, they manufacture earth scrapers that are that don't have machines on them but are pulled. And they recently contracted with Volvo in Sweden to put those machines on Volvo's floors around North America, which means that Volvo is one of many companies in Sweden and throughout Europe that requires environmental procedures for all of their suppliers. So they are required to go through a process that they need, that they're learning about and trying to implement in order to meet those guidelines.
Well, let me ask you this, Mary. Do you see, and Thorborn, I want you to chime in on this as well. Do you see a rise in community spirit and involvement because of these efforts towards sustainability? Mary, why don't you go first?
Well, yes, we do. I do see a rise. I would say it's coming everywhere. Yesterday in the Daily Press, for example, there's a very exciting article by Roger Hansen, who's with UW Wisconsin Alumni Group here, who is talking about working with the Ashland Area Development Corporation and bringing in a artisan corporation that wants to process biofuels in our area and connecting up with the UW Ag Station here that was closed several years ago. So, and the Office of Energy Independence that was created by the governor has provided incentives for our community that I think we will sign on to. There are many things happening. I know that today, for example, we have a meeting in Ashland of our Green Team Network, and it has two parts to it, and one is going to be training on how to green your offices, and the second one has to do with how you actually take your energy bills and can audit what your energy bills are and create an assessment so you can predict how to lower them. There are many things going on at every level. We have a sustainable campaign, Sustain, which is a door-to-door campaign that we're doing here. We just got through with a business conference that attracted people from over 44 communities throughout Wisconsin, and I had speakers there. And we have an upcoming, on June 25th, we have a big event up at the Big Top Chautauqua with Richard Heimberg, who is a person who's written and done a lot of research on peak oil. And that's in the evening. And we've been holding these kinds of big gatherings for the last 12 years. They started out at about 180 people. Last year we had 450. We anticipate the same number this year on the 25th of June.
Okay, let me. I want to get Torbjørn Lottie back in the conversation here. What has your experience been in terms of how the community feels about itself as it goes through this process of becoming more sustainable?
Well, first of all, I would just to add that what we are seeing now. I'm traveling all around the world, and I'm seeing some kind of global movement that are emerging all over the planet. And it's also important to say that it's not only the municipalities, although they started with the municipalities in Sweden, and you could say that thanks to the municipalities, and when they begin, for instance, to purchase in a sustainable way, they will have immediate impact on the whole market. And what happened in Sweden was actually that the market changed. Today, if you want to survive as a company on the market, you need to, for instance, to have some kind of environmental management system. And it's the progressive part of the business that in my opinion, is the driving force in the Swedish society as a whole today. So the market is actually moving in this direction, but it was thanks to those thousands of people that started up this from the beginning, and thanks to the municipalities to endorse this process after a while. So Sweden is a good example of how actually the whole country can change, but it starts from the grassroots level.
Well, I know that we mentioned Ashland, and Mary, you mentioned Washburn. I know Bayfield is one of those communities, and there are others around the state. What I've seen so far, these are relatively small communities. I mean, Ashland's population, about 8,000, between 8,000 and 9,000, somewhere in that neighborhood. How do you take something like this, and I'll toss this out to either one of you, but maybe Torbjørn, you'd like to respond first. How do you take this to some place like, say, Milwaukee, where we're talking about a city that has more than a million people, and making it happen there?
It's more complicated, but it's doable because it's a question of working at each level at the same time. We have in Sweden, we have the biggest city. Stockholm is an eco-municipality. We have cities like Dublin in Ireland that's starting up similar processes today. So it's just the framework, the planning tool is possible to use on every level. So it's just to do it in a systematic way on each of those levels. But what's important is even in a city like Milwaukee, you must come down to the grassroots level.
So it can start in a neighborhood, for example.
Exactly.
Okay, where people can get together. Let's get another caller in here. I want to talk to Rob in River Falls. Rob, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. I saw Torbjørn speak at Chautauqua a few years back, and I thought he did a pretty good job. I could see how it worked in Sweden, but I just don't see how it's going to work in northern Wisconsin.
Mary, if you want to respond to that.
Well, my take is that it is working in northern Wisconsin. I don't know how to convey the synergy that's created between our sustainable agricultural community, our government community. I've been a member of the Alliance for Sustainability, which is a nonprofit group up here, for about 15 years, and we've created a full-time office. And so I think one of the ways you get things to work is to have either the government or a local nonprofit set up an office where you can take in a lot of ideas, look for grants, and actually help train people. I was also going to respond to your question before, John, about how larger cities can engage in this, and I have to say that we take a lot of our leadership from the city of Madison. Madison was the first city in Wisconsin to train all of it, its employees in the natural step. They have a regular training program. They set up an Office of Sustainability, and they've developed these procedures inside their city government where you lay out through discussions with an advisory committee in city of Madison, you lay out charters that people follow inside city government, and you can check off as you move forward. So they've pretty much institutionalized the natural step, and in their eco-municipality building, it started to have an impact. I'm not sure if the questioner thinks that northern Wisconsin is very different. I actually feel that what we're building up here is a model for rural America, because our all the jurisdictions that we have, and we're talking cities, counties, townships, in our region, they each have their own meetings and their own state regulations on what they're supposed to do. And we've created a board up here of representatives from those different jurisdictions that can sit down and talk about this one very important idea, which is how to reduce our ecological footprint, and that's happening.
800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, that's a toll-free number if you'd like to join our conversation about sustainability and how you can get your community started down that path. 800-642-1234, 263-1890, please, if you're in Madison, 263-1890. If you would prefer to send an email, here is the address, talk@wpr.org. And I no sooner said that than we had an email from Jessica in Nina, and she asks, how do you measure the success of these local sustainability programs? Torbjorn, you want to start with that one first, and then I'll have Mary respond as well.
This is an interesting question, since I've seen that in U.S. you have some kind of traditional starting with indicators and measuring. What we are doing in our processes in Sweden is actually we start with actions, we start with seeing that we know where to go. And when we know where to go and have action plans for that, then we can, depending on what kind of action we have, we can decide what kind of indicators we have. So, for instance, in Robertsfors, it took us 5 years to have the sustainable action plan ready. And from that, we can decide what kind of indicators. So the indicators are directly related to those kind of actions that we are doing.
And we do place a lot of emphasis on keeping score here in the United States.
That, I know that.
That's for sure. Mary, you want to add anything to that? Or?
Well, that to me is a really important question. This the unecological footprint was mentioned earlier, and that's a conceptual idea that came up from, I think his name is William Rees in Canada back in 1992, in which you actually measure what your consumption is in terms of energy and impact in terms of acres per person, and it's very big in the United States. But the Office of Energy Independence, which has just been created by the governor, has set up a goal for the year 2025, and they call it the 25 by 25 goal, which is that 25% of our renewable energy will come from renewables by the year 2025. And I've met with folks down there and talked about what are you going to use for measurements and where's the baseline. And we're struggling with creating a baseline assessment here. And the way we're doing that in our Green Team Network is we're training people to take their energy bills currently and be able to assess where all the meters are, where all the energy is used, and then meet with somebody from Focus on Energy to talk about how to reduce that. For example, and that's the only way, we have a goal by the end of the summer to have all 18 of our members of our Green Team Network create a baseline assessment of their energy use, because otherwise you don't know, you know, what you're aiming towards. And So that's how we're trying to get a handle on it right now, which means most of our efforts are focused on conservation and reduction of energy use. And the main incentive that we're using with our government structures is to talk about the cost. And the city of Ashland, we spend about $483,000 a year on our energy bills. And we've been told by the Office of Focus on Energy that with diligence and attention to how we use our energy and some changes, we could probably reduce that by 15 to 20% up front. So that's one of our first steps here.
We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to take some phone calls, and we have some people who've called in and want to join us and ask questions. You can be one of them if you want to call us at 800-642-1234 or 263-1890. We're talking about sustainability. We have a couple of guests who can give you some advice if you want to get something started in your community or can answer your questions or who would be happy to just discuss the issue with you. We appreciate their time and yours. We'll be back with more of our program in just a moment. I'm John Munson. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's 8:42. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After 9 o'clock this morning, the talk turns to Cuba. For Kathleen Dunn and her guest, they'll discuss life after Fidel Castro, how recent policy changes have affected Cuban-American families, and what the current U.S. presidential candidates are saying about future relations with Cuba. So a Cuban flavor to our next hour here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about sustainability and what people can do in their own communities to get the ball rolling. We have two guests with us by phone, and you can also join us as we have some lines available for you if you call now. 800-642-1234. It's toll-free. 263-1890, please, if you're in Madison. And the email is talk@wpr.org. My two guests are Torbjørn Lottie, who is the project director for Sustainable Roberts Forest, a 5-year sustainable community demonstration project in Sweden. He's also the co-author of The Natural Step for Communities, How Cities and Towns Can Change to Sustainable Practices. And he will be appearing at the Midwest Renewable Energy Association Energy Fair on Sunday, June 22nd. He'll be presenting a workshop there in Custer, Wisconsin, which is near Stevens Point. My other guest is Mary Raywald. She's in her 10th year on the Ashland City Council, and she's been a leader in the effort to have the city become one of the first eco-municipalities in the United States 3 years ago. She's the co-founder of the Alliance for Sustainability, a fellow at the Wisconsin Rural Leadership Program, and she also teaches at Northland College. And Mary, I'd ask you what you do in your spare time, but I don't think you probably have any. Let's take a call next from Jerry in the town of Rochester. Jerry, good morning. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much for taking my call. In the fall of the year here in the town of Rochester, the air is just thick with smoke because of people burning their leaves. We have no place to take our leaves as a compost area to get rid of them. The town is unwilling to do anything, at least at this point, because they indicate that they provide an area to get rid of our refuge like this. It's going to increase the taxes, and nobody wants to increase taxes. Is there a way around that you can get community cooperation in that type of situation?
Not knowing how big... You're in a town, and you have a board of three people that run the town?
Hello, I'm sorry. I couldn't hear you.
Jerry, she was asking, how big is the town board?
How big is the town board? We probably have about seven people on the town board.
Okay. You know, I have to confess that I think the rubber hits the road in the government decision-making on this, which is why I ran for city council 10 years ago. And if I would recommend to anyone, if there's an issue that they want to bring forward and they go to the board and they don't get satisfaction, they should run for office. I know that's a fairly big suggestion, but I believe in civic involvement and that it doesn't take somebody with extra special training to help make democratic decisions. I don't know how to respond to that. I could go through a number of issues that we deal with on a biweekly basis here in Ashland.
Have you found that you received support within the community, even though there might be a tax increase to put some of these things in place, or is there? Can you show economic benefits from doing that?
Well, that's a really good question that you're asking. The big challenge for all of us is that in order to reduce your energy or to implement an environmental policy, you often need to invest in something. It's the same thing that we do in our own homes, et cetera. And it's getting the government to agree to that. So, for example, in the city of Ashland, it's taken quite a while for our city council to agree to put a definition inside of one of our new jobs for our manager of facilities here to oversee sustainability and energy reduction in the city. Nobody had that responsibility, and that's been a big challenge and issue in business and government that this isn't on the regular agenda. People aren't used to dealing with these issues, and people are much more comfortable not making any changes. So, you know, I've often told people I don't think this is any different than, for example, deciding you're overweight and need to go on a diet. And when people go on diets, they have to consciously do something. They have to change their behavior, which is extremely hard to do. And we're faced with a real crisis on the planet right now, and I think that this message is going to increase and impact people.
Well, there's a clear issue here, though, because you've got some immediate and upfront costs that you have to measure against longer-term gains. And I want Mr. Lottie to respond to this as well. How do you get people to change their mindset to get off of what it's going to cost me this afternoon or tomorrow to what I'm going to be gaining down the road?
What we try to have people to work with is a method that we call ABCD, and the first step in this ABCD is actually to get people aware about what this is about. But then in the BCD, you're making up this program where you actually are looking both at the long-term perspectives, but also in the end at the short-term perspectives. And this is where it's so important when you make up the program that you also see the what we call the low-hanging fruits. But believe me that when I say that there are lots of low-hanging fruits in the American society where you actually can earn money and earn energy and see that the environment becomes better. And if you start with those low-hanging fruits, you will also see that there's no conflict between ecology and economy. Yes, there are some investments regarding structure and that must be taken sooner or later if you want to change this society into some kind of sustainable track. But you don't necessarily start with those because it's important to see that you have a success in the, especially in the early stage of the process. If you can have your politicians to actually see those low-hanging fruits where it's just a win-win relationship between the short-term and long-term perspective.
And let me add something to that, John. And we had a speaker at our Sustainable Business Conference in April, Bob Willard, who'd worked with IBM for many years up in Canada. He did an analysis of small and large businesses that actually adopted major sustainability practices. And he was able to show in his presentation that large corporations can boost their net profits by 34% on average, and small businesses by an astonishing 60% if they sell themselves as having green policies, because there are now so many consumers that are not only looking for those products, but their energy cost savings when you go green.
Mm. We're talking about sustainability. Send us an email if you're interested in getting in on the program. The email address is talk@wpr.org. We're going to go back to the phones because the phone banks are full, and we'll start with Bobby in Gurnee, Wisconsin. Bobby, thanks for joining us. Hello.
Hi.
Go ahead.
My name is Bobby Rongstead. I work with Focus on Energy, and I'm currently working with the green team in the Shawamigan Bay Area. I just wanted to say that in 20 years of working in the conservation field, this is the most interest I've ever seen in energy conservation, and I'm busier than I've ever been. So that's a great indicator that it's working.
Good.
So if we want to keep score, that's one way to measure success. Bobby, thank you for joining us this morning. Let's go. Let's go next to. I can make my bifocals work. I think we're going to go to Paul in Slinger. Paul, good morning.
Good morning. I just came in on this program, and as I see it, when I'm listening, is this is a hydra-headed problem, and in this country we have. You have to bifurcate this thing. One is you have the heating, air conditioning, efficiency issues with our every building from residential to large industrial commercial. And it's how to extract energy savings in retrofitting everything from motors, variable speed control motors to more efficient compressors, et cetera, et cetera. The next one is resource recycling or reclamation. And Europe is way ahead of us in this area. And that's government mandates where they force the major global companies to have a recycling program for your refrigerator or your air conditioner or all your computer components, where they enter the reclamation stream where they're broken down and you're reclaiming the magnesium, the cobalt, et cetera, et cetera. And in this country, you can't get change unless you are affecting a company, a corporation, or an individual's pocketbook. That's the only way you get change in this country. And how you do this at a city or county or township level, they don't have the governmental strength to mandate these recycling programs or to improve the efficiencies of buildings or to mandate more reclaimed like carpeting that's made with the waste stream. So it has to either come minimally at a state level or a federal level. And at the federal level, it's they're brain dead, and these senators don't have a degree in the sciences, and they are politicians and they're attorneys, and they're going to only react to how they're going to keep their reelection coffers full.
Okay. So. Let's let our guests have a chance to respond. We've got a lot of material to get through in the last 6 minutes of the program here.
I would just suggest that government can do a lot. Yet local government can mandate if they're going to build lead, silver, platinum, or gold, buildings in the future. They can mandate what kind of vehicles they buy. They can, in the city of Ashland, they require all of their citizens to recycle. So one of our next steps is to maybe require businesses to recycle because we don't in the city of Ashland. The role of local government, in my mind, is to educate people in a community that actually talk to each other and can see what's going on. And it's the local government's responsibility to show themselves as a model for how to do this.
I want to get to this email because I think this is exactly the kind of thing we wanted at the start of the program. Lisa in Appleton emails, "We are an Appleton-based manufacturer and are interested in incorporating sustainable practices in our business and product development. Do you have recommendations as to how we can start? Do you have information on any resources we can tap into? Also, do you have information with regard to any sustainability coalitions or organizations in the Fox Valley area?" Boy, a lot to chew on there, and we only have about 4 minutes left.
There's a major sustainability conference coming up near Appleton, which is being run by FOSS up in the Green Bay area, and I recommend that she go to that because they will have Bob Willard there as a speaker and Torbjørn Lati in the whole day. I can't remember the exact date. I think it's in June 19th.
19th, yes.
Torbjørn, any advice for this person on how to get her company started on the path to sustainability?
There are lots of good examples from companies that are applying. They're implementing this kind of the concept that I'm talking about. There are lots of big companies, there are lots of smaller companies. They can look at the TNS home page and look for good examples. I also want to add to the question before that what's important to understand that we are talking about worldwide changes, yes, but you always start with your own box. because you are the only person that's responsible for your box. If you then can go up to a bigger box, like the community or the municipality, the local region that you're living in, you can work with that. Sooner or later, you will come up to the state and federal level and the international level where you change everything else. But it starts as grassroots movements, where the awareness is the most important part of it.
We had an email from Elizabeth in Appleton. The event Mary just mentioned is on Wednesday the 18th at the Appleton Public Library. So, I think we were talking about the 19th. I bet they would know at the public library since that's where the event is supposed to take place.
Evening 18th is at the library. Yes, that's okay. Then it's the seminar the 19th also. But
so 2 days of two different days, the 18th and 19th, yeah. And people can get information. And I want to mention also that. Again, the Midwest Renewable Energy Association is having their 19th annual Renewable Energy Fair next weekend, and it starts Friday, June 20th in Custer, Wisconsin, which is near Stevens Point. And Torborn, you're speaking on Sunday, June 22nd. Do you know what time of the day that's going to be?
I'm actually not sure.
Okay, well, it'll be sometime on the 22nd, and
his keynote is at 1 o'clock p.m.
Okay, 1 o'clock. So you can get that. Mary, you mentioned a website. You alluded to a website earlier where people could get information about what you're doing. I think can you give us that as we get to the close of the program here?
Our website is AllianceForSustainability.org.
Alliance for Sustainability, all one word, .org.
Right, and it has our community programs, business, government, our upcoming pie in politics on June 25th.
Okay. And I just want to thank you both for a very informative hour, and appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you.
Thanks, John.
My guests this hour were Torbjørn Lahti, who is co-author of The Natural Step for Communities, How Cities and Towns Can Change to Sustainable Practices, and Mary Raywald, who is on the Ashland City Council and was a co-founder for the Alliance for Sustainability. They both joined me by phone. Thank you to everyone who called. Thanks for everybody who participated in getting this program put together, Rob Ferret and Karen Prager. And probably a host of other people as well here at Wisconsin Public Radio who labor behind the scenes. Coming up next, Kathleen Dunn will be along in just a few moments, and you'll want to stay tuned for that. I'm John Munson, sitting in for Joy Cardine this week. Joy will be back on Monday. You're tuned to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.